Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A groundbreaking advance in animation is playing on Netflix right now. It's The Liberator, a miniseries based on true World War II battles in Europe. Get ready to hear a trio of key players. Writer and showrunner Jeb Stuart, live from Dublin, Ireland. A&E Studios chief Barry Johnson, live from Los Angeles. And from Atlanta, Treescope Studios executive producer L.C. Chad Crowley. All three join me next in an internet radio exclusive. We have another milepost to spotlight this Friday, 2,000 episodes of The Doctors, the Emmy-winning daytime series. That's happening next half hour with executive producer Jay McGraw. And as of this month, Spanish language network Estrella TV has a sister channel, Estrella News. More on this and other Estrella developments from Executive Vice President Ivan Svokovic and Renee Citanella in our final 30 minutes. Also ahead, that HBO Max Friends reunion is back on, plus another reunion coming up next week, our new Classic Trivia winner, and one more Norm Crosby note. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on Amazon Music and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us on this unique Masters afternoon for the program all about TV's current and future. We have a great 90 minutes in store for you. It's 49 degrees at the top of the hour, and I'll tell you, it's really an exciting time, by the way. Just to bring up today on the Masters for a moment, Tiger Woods teed off about a half hour ago. He is only 5 shots back behind the leader, Adrian Mosseri. Second round is going on. Good chance that more of the players will not finish their round today, so they'll finish it tomorrow morning. We'll keep you posted on that. But a really exciting time down in Augusta, Georgia with the Masters. And great opening round by Tiger Woods, bogey 3 and 4 under par for that opening round. At that point, 3 behind the leader at the time, Paul Casey. Now he's 5 shots back. But again, Woods just started a half hour ago. We have a great show in store for you, so stay tuned. I think you're going to like what these next 90 minutes are going to bring you. And we want you involved in the action, so interact with us at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and Tuner Radio. Shy about the phone, no problem with us. We got a chat room, and it's ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while we are on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. So simple. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, or tune in screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Our trio from The Liberator on Netflix joins us live from Dublin, Ireland, Los Angeles, and Atlanta after these news notes. It's all about reunion specials today at HBO Max. For everyone wondering when the cast of Friends will hook up for their long-planned reunion gig, your long wait may be sunsetting. Co-star Matthew Perry via Twitter declares that production of this special will happen in March by late spring, early summer 2021 premiere. Much closer to HBO Max watching eyeballs is the Will Smith-led Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion special. That event will run next Thursday, with Peacock dropping a dramatic-minded Bel-Air series from Smith's Westbrook Studios venture for mid to late 2021 release. Bel-Air has a 2-season commitment from Peacock. Now some quickies before our trio of guests. A new series adaptation of the classic H.G. Wells novel, The Island of Dr. Moreau, is underway at Dust. That's Gunpowder and Sky Science Fiction Service for smart TV distribution. We had them on this program many years ago. Another Spectrum original series coming next year is Eden, a mystery set in Australia, done Rashomon style, as in each episode offering one character's view of what's happening. The CW is working on Modern Austin, where one Jane Austen tale unfolds in a contemporary setting each season. Pride and Prejudice, based in San Francisco, is the storyline in play. Hasan Minhaj, a Patriot Act, will turn from that Netflix series to season 2 of The Morning Show on Apple TV Plus next year. And another Disney holiday sing-along will Jingle Bell Rock November 30th on ABC. Ryan Seacrest returns as Tune Master with Pink, Michael Bublé, Ciara, and Julianne Hough among the performers. And that is news notes for today. This week, Netflix premiered a very unusual miniseries for Veterans Day. It's called The Liberator. It's been a program in the works for several years. Originally, it was supposed to be an 8-hour History Channel miniseries. But in the end, it's turned out to be even more innovative. It's a mix of live action and computer graphic animation from a new studio in Atlanta called Trioscope. In fact, Trioscope is the name of the unique process that's being used. It's a very unusual situation, and we have three people who are involved in the process. First up, joining us live from Dublin, Ireland, is the co-creator, executive producer, writer, and showrunner of The Liberator, Jeb Stewart. Jeb, thanks for coming aboard.
Thanks, Simon. It's great to be here.
And joining us live from New York, I should say from Los Angeles by way of New York, is the chief executive of A&E Studios, Barry Johnson. Barry, welcome in. Barry, are you there? Actually, let's see if we have him right here. I believe so. Here he comes up. Now, Barry, are you there?
Good morning from Los Angeles. Go Tiger.
All right, you got it. And joining us from Trioscope Studios headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia, is executive producer L.C. Chaz Crowley. By the way, if the name is familiar, we had him on several years ago when he did a series for Discovery Channel, which was based on a podcast, one of the first podcast-adapted series for television called Stuff You Should Know. L.C., great to have you back.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Barry, we'll start with you. Tell us about the transition you made to go from an 8-hour live-action miniseries for History Channel to what people are seeing now on Netflix.
Hey, thank you so much. First of all, I want to just say to Chad and Jeb how much we love the show, how proud of everyone, not only at A&E Studios, but A&E Networks are with the show, with its results. I literally have been receiving texts, phone calls, emails for the past 2 days, literally from all over the world. In some cases, from people I haven't spoken with in years, to say, hey, I saw your show. I love it. It's great. So the show is out. It's working. We're super proud. The transition is interesting. As the show began its development process before I started my work at A&E Studios. When I came in, they were already in development and with the intention that we were going to produce it for History. We had people traveling to Eastern Europe to do a feasibility study for its production, looking for tanks, wardrobe, equipment, weapons, and all the other things we needed to recreate this story in live action. What we realized were it was $10 to $15 million per hour production cost and nearly 2 years of time to make it. And at that time, no one in television was spending that kind of money. It was pre-Netflix, pre-Game of Thrones and all these kind of things. Shows just weren't being produced at that scale, that scope, and that cost. And although everybody wanted to make it until we could figure out a way to get it done, it needed to wait. What happened over the course of years were the commitment and the desire and the passion for the project continued, but we still hadn't really figured out, cracked the model of how to do it until someone in a moment of what if said animation. And that sent us on the incredible path that we're on today, which I think Jeb and Chad could tell you much more about. But the animation path led to some testing, creating some proof of concepts, one of which came from Chad's studio at Trioscope. And then the what if started being, yeah, that's possible. The proof of concepts found their way to a division of Netflix that's based in Tokyo, whose programming work is primarily anime, and the head of that department contacted me and said, hey, I heard this project called The Liberator. Can we talk? And that talk went on for weeks, if not months, and very quick, and over that time went from let's talk to let's do it. Which then led to the, okay, now we have to let the filmmakers in on what we've done or what we're about to do and see if it's something in which they have interest. So one day a call went into Jeb Stewart and said, Jeb, hey, animation, what do you think? And now I'm going to hand it to Jeb and let him tell you what happened there.
Absolutely, Jeb.
That's exactly what happened, Simon. There was a long pause at the end of that question, and but very quickly, Barry and his team sent a test that had been made by School of Humans and Trioscope, which took a scene from the script and had had produced it down in Atlanta, and it and then put the Trioscope process on it. And when I saw it, I was spellbound. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. It just felt like going through a graphic novel. But the fact that they use live actors gave it that sort of verisimilitude, that reality that you realize that these were not voiced characters. These were not voiced animated characters. These were actors acting my words, my story. And suddenly the scene was over, and I kept thinking, where's it, why isn't it going on? And I realized it's just a test. So I quickly got back in touch with A&E, and I said, you know, we need to talk. We need to meet these guys. And so that was done, and I was back east at the time, and Chad and his team were in Los Angeles and at A&E, and everybody got together. And I could tell from the minute that they walked into the room, this was just a great group of filmmakers. You can just sometimes know that people share the same interests, the same values, the same desire to make something in a particular way. And next thing you know, I was on a plane, went down to Atlanta, and the questions started to begin. You know, what's the look going to be like? Is it going to be like the test? Is it can how much more real can we make it? Why would we make it the way that, this way or in terms of that way? How many tanks can I get? How many planes can I get? What's the end of the envelope? And the answer was, it's the envelope's whatever you really want to make it. And by the time I left Atlanta, I was absolutely certain this was the way to go to create the scale and the scope of this particular story. But you should really talk to Chad about how they do this magic, because that's really a huge part of the story.
Can I just say one thing before Chad speaks?
What is it like to be in this innovative project where the opening story has, you know, it's based on real incidents? This is not, you know, an imaginary tale here. It's based on a best-selling book, but this is about an actual World War II incident. So I'm curious, in terms of not just the process itself, but the approach to the process, what was it like to pull it all together?
Yeah, sure. Barry, did you want to add something there?
Oh, I just wanted to say something very quickly. It's just in comment to what Jeb was saying. But there was a long silence. And then I said, hey, you know, was basically, look, we'll send you the test that, you know, that Chad and his team had brilliantly executed with very little direction. Really, it was like, here's the scripts, pick a scene, show us what you got. We were, you know, obviously spellbound, with good reason spellbound. I shouldn't say obvious, with good reason. It was brilliant. And then, you know, I said, Chad, it's a gem. We'll send this to you. You'll take a look, you know, think about it, talk to Michael, call us back. And then, yes, when he did call back, I think it was something like, I think you guys are crazy, but we're doing this. It was something like that. It was, I never imagined I would agree to doing my work in animation. We're doing it. And that's what, and now I just want to pass it back to Chad. It was a great moment for me.
No, thanks for that, Barry. Simon, do you mind repeating your question? I just want to make sure I understand.
Yeah, because you're debuting an innovative process here. I mean, this is a groundbreaking thing with animation. Even people have seen things like rotoscoping, which some people have compared this to. This is actually really using computer animation with live action, mixing it all together and making it very, very real. Because because the story itself is real. It's based on actual World War II battles. So I'm curious, A, about the approach to the project as well as the animation project itself, you know, bring it all to life.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit of background may help. You know, before we were so very lucky to have gotten involved in this project, we just sort of had a little bit of a maniacal dream, which was, you know, to tell stories that were otherwise untellable or that could really use creatively, you know, a boost in being told in animation, but we're really sort of off limits to the medium, because animation is sort of at that time has sort of found these, you know, very entrenched ruts of, you know, animation is just sort of always seen as a medium for kids in comedy. And so we just sort of started asking ourselves, why is that? And we kind of came up with the thesis that perhaps it has to do with how it looks. And if you want animation, you know, adults to take animation seriously, then you're going to have to connect with them on a deeper emotional level, and it's going to have to feel like real life in some way. So that was sort of this science project, if you will, that we were, you know, working on and doing testing, you know, in-house to sort of figure out what that looked like. And we came up with what ultimately was sort of a stupid, simple solution, which is, if you want your animation to feel more human and more adults, well, maybe you just need to put human adults in your animation. And so that's what we did. We started figuring out how to, you know, believably integrate live action footage into animation in a way that sort of made it feel like you're watching a version of the story that's but a very stylized one. And we, you know, we've sort of very purposefully created a moving graphic novel signature to give people, you know, a sort of a visual context that they, that's very relatable. And so, you know, when we were so lucky to have shown a little bit of our early test material to some people at A&E, and they brought this, the Liberator project up as a possible, you know, project to produce in Treoscope, we just felt like we'd hit the lottery in every way possible, because all the things, all our hopes and dreams for what we hoped, you know, Treoscope could do were in there. I mean, it was, it's a story that you couldn't imagine telling in any, you know, any sort of traditional form of animation, because of the you know, heavy, maybe the heaviest of all, you know, stories in human history, you know, and all the dark elements that are there. So that we knew that that was a massive, you know, with that massive responsibility also had a huge opportunity. But also just the, you know, I mean, it was Jeb Stuart, right? So, I mean, he's the god of action and so stuff, the sort of the visual feast that War provides, particularly when written by Jeb, was, like I said, it was, you know, some combination of winning the lottery and Christmas Day and whatever else you can think of. So our approach was really just to do as much justice to that material as we possibly could. And also, as you know, Jeb mentioned when he asked, you know, what can't we do, or what, how should I think about this? You know, we wanted to be able to say, look, you are fully, pardon the pun, liberated here. Like, there is no set piece too big. There is, you know, nothing too nuanced either. Go for it. And that felt really good. And, you know, hopefully we did right by him.
We're talking about The Liberator. It is the innovative mix of live action and animation that premiered on Netflix earlier this week, just in time for Veterans Day 2020. And you can now see it if you have Netflix on your smart TV set, smart TV device, and in some cases on your local cable system or multicast channel. We're speaking with three of the key people who made this unique project happen. From Dublin, Ireland, we've got the acclaimed writer, producer, showrunner, this Liberator, Jeb Stuart. He joins us live from Dublin. We have the head of A&E Studios, Barry Johnson, from Los Angeles. And from Atlanta, Georgia, executive producer at Telescope Studios, we have LC Chad Crowley. You're all with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. I'd love to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We have another war tale to tell you about on Monday's episode. It's about the Six-Day War in Israel. It's a new series on HBO Max called Valley of Tears. You will meet the co-creator, writer, and executive producer of the program, the acclaimed producer, writer, director, Ron Leshem. He is a big force in Israeli television. Some of those formats have hit the United States, such as Homeland and Euphoria, which he's the executive producer of, both the original Israeli version and the award-winning HBO version this summer that, of course, Zendaya won the Emmy Award for Best Actress in a Drama Series. And that's not all. He's got another new project he's working on. It was announced yesterday. We'll talk about that, too. He'll be our lead guest on Monday. Then our very good friend Kiki Landers will be with us. Next month, she's got the second Omnicultural TV Festival going on virtually in Los Angeles, where people of color get the opportunity to showcase brand-new pilots of all different genres. We'll talk to her about that, and we hope in December to have some of the winning pilots at that festival join us live. And finally, All Arts, the public television arts channel, is presenting this weekend a unique one-woman performance called Until the Flood, dealing with the Ferguson situation. we will have an exclusive interview with the creator and the performer of this special, Dale Orlando Smith. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, another great 90-minute edition happening right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jeb, talk about your approach to this real-life situation. This was one of the bloodiest battles, I understand, in World War II, and involves a group of soldiers who really had to come together to pull off the battle.
Simon, it's actually a longer process than a particular battle. It was really a 500-day odyssey that this group of soldiers went on that had begun back in Oklahoma when this group of Native Americans and Mexican Americans and Western white cowboys were sort of thrust together in a unit that the U.S. Army came in 1940 and basically said, this is a group that's just not certifiable for the U.S. Army. And Felix Sparks, who plays our protagonist in this story, you know, found a very unique way of uniting this group of soldiers, you know, almost all of whom could not drink in the same bars back in the United States. And over the course of this period, this group coalesced into a tremendous fighting force. I think, had multiple Medal of Honor winners, just tremendous valor throughout. So the story has a depth to it that sort of sets it apart from other World War II stories. And it also involves the Italian campaign, starting in Sicily, going through the lower boot of Italy, up to the liberation of Rome. The liberators were not on a single amphibious landing. They had five amphibious landings, the last of which was in southern France. And then they drove up through southern France into the Vosges Mountains in 1945 and hit really stiff resistance there as the Germans were fighting for their homeland, and pushed through there to Aschaffenburg, you know, which was one of the bloodiest street battles of World War II, and then finally down into Munich and Dachau. A story that really began with seven men in a rifle company back in Oklahoma, with a second lieutenant, Sparks, who was really a back office guy who was ordering the paper towels and gloves and things like that. He ends up a lieutenant colonel in charge of 10,000 men by the end of this 500-day journey. So taking a story that's that big is like taking, the Odyssey and breaking it down into the most important pieces. But since the characters are what drive this story, that's where I started. And we focus on a group of characters that I think help tell these individual stories and yet tell the group story at the same time.
Mm-hmm. LC, when you have to synthesize that 500-day odyssey into 4 hours or four parts of this miniseries, what was the most important thing to get across in the animation, and how did you accomplish that?
Well, Jeb, you know, really laid out such a beautiful framework. You know, each episode has such a distinct kind of tableau, and he was able to sort of structure that journey he talked about, you know, almost like levels. I mean, I often think of it sort of like levels of a video game, you know. So the first one is, you know, very, each of the terrains are so different visually, and obviously the stories themselves are so different. That really gave us the roadmap we needed, you know, to sort of bring those to life as almost like independent visual stories. And then just be true to that, you know, that was really the key for our director, Greg Jankaitis, when we're in the snow, I mean, to make that a sublime experience visually. And when we're, you know, in Aschaffenburg, as Jeb pointed out, you know, that's sort of an urban scenario. So that's a completely different, creative task that we wanted to bring to life in as vivid as way as possible.
And incidentally, I'm happy you mentioned the director, because with the kind of credits he has, like Sin City and Pan's Labyrinth and the Revenant, all Oscar nominees or Oscar-winning films, that's a really amazing thing. Barry, do you see this kind of series as a new direction for A&E Studios going forward? And while we're at it, what is next for A&E Studios in 2021?
I mean, look, A&E Studios, we're our primary job is to support A&E networks with scripted programming. We've had multiple productions on Lifetime and on History. We're going to continue to do that. We, over the last two or three years, we've pivoted our business to be more effective and prolific as an independent studio. We now have The Liberator on Netflix. We have Big Sky premiering on ABC on Tuesday night. As you know, Big Sky was created by David E. Kelley. We have development across the board at every major streamer, broadcast networks, cable. We are active in drama series, miniseries, movies. We support Lifetime with multiple movies per year. We are thrilled to we have a comedy business as well. And lastly, and most importantly for this discussion, we are thrilled that we've established ourselves as a studio that supplies animation, and we hope that in the very near future we're going to be announcing a new animation project, and ideally with Jeb and Chad and their respective companies and teams.
Chad, I'll throw it to you before I throw it to Jeb for one last thought, and that is, where do you see TrioScope going? What kind of things can be done with this advanced animation process? And aside from what it looks like you'll be doing with A&E Studios again for a second project, what else is in the hopper?
You know, for us, Simon, we really our vision is sort of quite grand, I guess you'd say. I mean, we think that Liberator represents a sort of Pandora's box for, you know, animated drama to really kind of find a bigger audience, you know, around the globe. And so the technology that we've developed in-house, a big part of what we're doing now is making it, you know, sort of platformizing it so that many other studios can come in and utilize it to tell stories. So that's a big focus for us, is to, you know, is to kind of open a whole new lane or a whole new category of content. Streamers are responding. Lots of buyers, and you know, streamers included, are responding very favorably to that vision. So, from our studio perspective, we've got lots of development set up, and you know, kind of all over town. And yeah, we're super excited about, you know, following up Liberator with A&E and Jeb. Could not think of a better thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And Jeb, before we wrap, where do you see your work in television going? And with all this happening, what do you hope this process will open up for not just you, but for other storytellers, for other series creators? Jeb? Jeb, are you there?
Can you hear me, Simon? Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Ahead.
I said there's a tremendous opportunity.
What's next for you as a storyteller, and how do you see this animation process not only working for yourself, but also for all other, you know, people in your field, you know, writing and creating stories for television?
Well, currently I'm over in Ireland doing another Netflix original, Vikings Valhalla. And so it's a big live action show at this particular point. And but I'm looking forward to getting back into a project with Chad, and we are always talking about different things and what can we do with this, and what does that mean in terms of the story, and what are we trying to accomplish, and how visually would that be different? But I think the second part of your question is a really good one, which is, I think TrioScope, and Chad touched on it. It really is a fabulous platform for lots of different, sometimes challenging, dramatic stories. And it can also open the door for a lot of younger filmmakers who might not have the opportunities to make something like a $200 million action picture, but they could do it in TrioScope and the on a stage in lit in a way that with a lot of good planning and a great script, you could create a powerful type of action piece. So the sky's the limit, as we said at the very beginning. It starts with a good and smart group of filmmakers and somebody who can see the potential in this particular format.
I wish we had more time, but I got to tell you this. If you are listening to us right now, you are listening in on the beginning of a very exciting new direction for television and for television animation. And if you haven't seen The Liberator yet, you can check it out right now on Netflix, available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, in some cases cable systems, and other places too. More details about the program online, Netflix.com. That's Netflix.com. The Liberator, available now on Netflix. Barry Johnson, Jeb Stewart, L.C. Chan Crowley, thank you all very much for coming on. Congratulations on this innovation happening, and we would love to have all three of you back when you have the next project set up. Come back, and we'd love to have you on, and we'll devote the whole hour to it. I'll tell you, we have just scratched the surface. This is a very, very special development in television history, and thank you all for the role you had in making it happen.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome.
Bye,
take care. Have a super weekend. Jeb Stewart, Barry Johnson, and L.C. Chad Crowley joining us live from Dublin, Ireland, from Atlanta, and from Los Angeles. When we come back, The Doctors. Yesterday, it went past episode 2000, and executive producer Jay McGraw will talk about all of that from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradiospeakerandtunein.com. Together, reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel. Check it out 24/7. Reports from all over the globe on this pandemic and what's being done to deal with it, plus podcasts and other original material. The Coronavirus News Channel. Check it out anytime you like. TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to the second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, another 90th edition of the program all about TV's current and future coming your way. We are with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. 49 degrees is half of the hour. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from the Big Apple. Happy to have you with us on this Masters Friday afternoon. Very unusual. The famed Masters Golf Tournament, usually the first one of the Big Four in April, now in November. If you just joined us, by the way, second round underway. Abraham Anser, as we went on the air, is leading at 9 under par. Tiger started his round about an hour ago. Looks like the second round is going to have to stop at around 5:30 Eastern time. So whoever's on the course will play again and finish their round on Saturday morning. And we'll let you know if ESPN is going to carry it in our next half hour. We have more great guests coming your way over the next 60 minutes. So give us a call. Be part of the program, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. My next guest has not one, but two big mileposts to celebrate right now. The first is that yesterday, his long-running syndicated series, which he serves as executive producer, The Doctors, marked episode 2000. And that's not all. On Monday night on CBS, his popular primetime series, Bull, starring Michael Wedley, begins season number 5. Joining us live from Los Angeles, Jay McGraw. Jay, welcome in.
Hey, Simon, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Very, very fine, thank you. And let's get this out of the way. You are Dr. Phil's son, and you are making it great on your own.
I am. It's been a great father to have, that's for sure. He's the best.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of his program and what he does in life, and he is an absolutely amazing person. And it's thrilling that he has really given you the opportunity to pursue your dreams in television as well as his dreams, too. Let's talk about The Doctors. Congratulations on episode 2000. Did you ever think you'd get that far?
Oh, you certainly don't think about the 2000th episode in the beginning. You're just hoping to get the show on the air and then put out the good content. And 2000 is a lifetime away, literally, for a lot of us. I mean, I look back to when we started this so long ago, and we were all, young and none of us, a bunch of us didn't have kids, and now we've got so many kids on the staff, and so it's literally been lifetimes for some of us.
When it came on, it still is one of the most unique daytime programs around, because it's not just a panel show, it's not just a talk show, it's not just a demonstration show. It is a program that uses a lot of different techniques to showcase where we're at in terms of medicine and health and people's relationship to it.
Yeah, look, I said in the beginning that I didn't want The Doctors to be a talk show. That was the format that we lived in, and that's what we're referred to. But I said, I want to make sure that we're not a talk show, but rather a doing show. I want to see us doing medical procedures, and I want to have models and animations, and I want people, you know, I say that the doctors that are best on the show are those who have gone through decades of schooling to understand the subject matter, but then can explain it to those of us without the decades of schooling in a way that we can not only understand, but then use in our daily lives. And so I wanted to make sure that we found doctors that could communicate it like that. And then from a production standpoint, you know, if we had a giant heart that the doctors could take apart, then I wanted to do that if that was the best. If it was animation that worked best to educate our audience, then we wanted to do that. If it was to get an actual organ and set it on the table and look at the difference in the size of a healthy heart versus a diseased heart, you know, whatever it was that really helped everyone understand what it was that we were talking about, I wanted to make sure that we were a really visual show. My dad was on Jay Leno back at the beginning of the Dr. Phil show, and he said to my dad, never forget the vision part of television. And that always rang really true with both of us. You really want to make sure that the audience is seeing as well as hearing the things that you're talking about on the show. And I think that's been a big component of what made the show resonate with the audience over the years, is that it was, you know, sometimes you kind of almost hid your eyes because it was pretty intense. But it was interesting, and I think that's really, you know, been a staple of the show for so many years.
For you and for everybody involved in your crew, what do you think has been the most rewarding aspect of doing the doctors in terms of, was there a particular medical condition or health condition that you feel the doctors took the lead in terms of alerting the American public about?
You know, what we really prided ourselves on was giving people usable information, things that their family could implement into their life that day that would be functional to them, right? So not just the interesting stories. I always love the Inside Edition stories where the construction worker gets the giant nail in his brain, but he's fine, right? I mean, those are always so just interesting to see. But that's not really where we hung our hat. Instead of having just interesting, eye-catching information, we wanted to have usable information. It was things like, as simple as it sounds, what color of snot is contagious, right? So back in pre-pandemic ages when it's like, you know, your kids have allergies today, it's clear snot, they can go to school and you can go to work, versus the green where it's like, no, they're sick and contagious and need to stay home, things like that. I think one of the most memorable stories for me, we did a long time ago, the doctors did a segment about CPR and how at the time the cadence that you did it was to the song Staying Alive. And, you know, the compressions to breath ratio. And we did that in a real understandable, memorable way. And like a week or two later, a young lady's daughter had fallen upside down in a 5-gallon bucket of water that was just sitting in the backyard. And you don't really think anything about it. It's a bucket sitting in the backyard. It had rained and there was some water in it or something. And the little girl, baby, had fallen upside down. So now you got a baby whose arms are trapped. She's upside down. She can't do anything. The mom finds her a short time later, gets the baby out. And because of having seen that CPR segment on the doctors, was able to revive her baby and save her life before the paramedics could even get there. And she wrote into the show. Actually, we saw it on the local news and brought her on the television show. And those stories are the ones that, to me, are the most rewarding over the years.
We're speaking with Jay McGraw. He is the executive producer of the long-running syndicated series The Doctors, syndicated by CBS Television Distribution, available on TV stations all over the country, now in season 13, and yesterday passed its 2,000th original episode. Jay joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm up with you live from New York. Coming up, we'll be talking about another thing he does called Bulls, which is about to celebrate its milestone, start of season 5, Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on CBS. If you have a question or comment for Jay, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday, we're going to vote the first hour to not one, but two very unique new television ventures that we think are going to be among the two that you should be keeping an eye out for in 2021. One of them is called Global Environmental Media. They want to do a new smart TV television network, or maybe down the road a linear TV channel, dealing with solutions to environmental problems. You'll meet three of the people making it happen. And then we'll talk to somebody based here in the New York area who's got a project now called Seize the Show. It may be a new force in interactive television. Oh, and by the way, he has an interesting sidelight a musical sidelight that you'll hear about. His name is David Carpenter. He's the chief executive officer of Seize the Show and the company that makes it happen. He'll be on the program a week from today. Also, we'll showcase a producer, writer, actor, and star of a new movie, a holiday movie called A New York Christmas Wedding, coming to Netflix. His name, Otoja Abit. That's all coming up a week from today, 3:30 New Pacific. Now, more than 90 minutes live and for you right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jay, this year you have taken this season in some different directions, and you've done it in the midst of this pandemic. Talk about the decisions to move the show physically, to change the format, and to do it among coronavirus circumstances.
Yeah, look, I think that at the end of the day, what we're doing is telling really compelling stories. And I think that it doesn't matter where it is that you do that from. But as the TV landscape changed over the last 13 years, and when I say TV landscape, I really mean the media landscape, the way that viewers consume entertainment. If you look at, young kids that are watching and now adults also, you're watching videos on YouTube that are shorter in length, that are quicker in pace, that are rich in graphics and visual aspects of it. And television has to evolve at the same time. And so after 13 years, it was time to evolve the television show. When we started The Doctors, Regis was still hosting his show live. Diane Sawyer was on GMA, right? I mean, we probably adapted slower than most people. And so it was probably time to, freshen up the look and feel of the show. And so far, the response from the audience has been really, really positive.
How do you find it that you are having to deal with producing the show under coronavirus pandemic conditions, and at the same time, that's also a major subject of your program?
Yeah, I've always felt that you need to do a really good job at what you're doing, and if you can't do it really well, then you should do something else. And right now, because of the coronavirus pandemic, you can't have an audience. You can't have as many guests traveling in. You certainly can't do it responsibly for a show like The Doctors, where we can't be standing up there saying everyone should wear a mask and stay 6 feet apart and then filling a room full of people to watch you talk about it. And so instead of sitting in an empty soundstage with 100 or 200 empty chairs, looking back at you where an audience would be, and basing the format on flying in guests and having all these great stories, we decided to say, okay, how can we do this in a way that it's going to be the best version of what we can do? And that was a large driver in the decision to move the show and to put it in a space that doesn't require that large live studio audience to have the energy in the room, et cetera. And so I think that the situation was a big component in the decision to move and modify the show. And it's allowed us to, still be able to be timely, be topical, and give people the medical information that they need about the pandemic, and then also around the pandemic. I mean, the normal daily medical situations that we deal with are still happening regardless of the fact that we're in the pandemic. It just changes the ability to manage them, to find the help that you need, and it changes your motivation to go into a medical office and seek that help, right? And so I think that The Doctors at this point plays a large role, not in just educating people around things that are specific to the coronavirus, but reminding our audience that you have a normal health regimen that you need to follow and pay attention to, independent of what's going on with this pandemic. I started a company a number of years ago called Doctor on Demand, where you're able to see a board-certified and licensed physician from really anywhere in the United States with an average wait time of like 3 minutes. And it's covered by most insurance at this point. And the usage that we've seen on that company has skyrocketed during the pandemic. And the use cases for people calling in has increased significantly, because at this point, as I'm sure you know, nobody wants to go to the doctor's office if they can avoid it, because that is definitely a self-selecting group of people that in a pandemic you want to stay away from. And so I think that the doctors has done a great job in reminding people that you still have to think about your health, and you still have to manage conditions that you have or that you think may be coming on. And I think Dr. Nguyen has actually done a good job of giving people a safe alternative to do so.
Mm-hmm. Earlier in the week, we had John Quinn, the executive producer of Let's Make a Deal, which is coming back for its 12th season, along with The Price is Right, Monday on CBS, about the fact that he and The Price is Right had to make major changes in both shows, because both shows are audience-driven. The contestants come from the audience. The audience fuels the energy, just like Dr. Phil's show does, just like your show, the doctor's does too. And I'm curious, you know, how do you deal with – it's been interesting to see how a lot of syndicated shows, talk shows, game shows, et cetera, have had to deal with the lack of an audience, or having an audience zoomed in, if you will, through video.
It has been interesting to watch, and I think different people have handled it differently and, you know, I think all very well. I do think also, you know, for shows like – Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal and, you know, a number of other shows on the air, entertainment and distraction from the craziness that's in the world right now is at a premium that it's never been at, right? I mean, we're all looking for some way to just escape the constant cycle of seriously bad news that is affecting us, you know, right at home. And so I applaud those guys for taking a format that's, you know, older than I am, quite frankly, and making it work in today's environment, because, you know, we need it now probably more than ever.
Yeah. One other thing before we move on to Bull, and that is with two things, actually. One is how is the new host doing, the solo host doing? And secondly, in light of the death last weekend of Alex Trebek, whether you're going to be doing any future segments on pancreatic cancer or doing a salute to how he himself handled that condition.
Yeah, Ian is doing a great job. He's a longtime friend of the show and contributor to the show and has had various roles on the show over the years. He's just a great communicator. He's happy. He's uplifting. He's a fun guy, right? He's one of those guys that you want to go to a baseball game with just because he's fun to sit next to and talk about whatever it is that you're talking about. And I think that's so important in a television host. I think that it needs to be somebody that you would enjoy sitting and talking about whatever the topic was. So that when he's delivering the information that is based on fact and science and is based on health, that it's still somebody that you enjoy hanging out with that's giving you that information. And, you know, he's just good at what he does. And so he sat in that chair and he felt right at home from minute one. And I think that's part of the reason that the audience is responding so positively to him, because – you know, it's fun to watch people have fun, and Ian's having fun up there and doing good work while he's doing it. So he's done great. I couldn't be more happy and proud of happy with him and proud of him. Great new addition to the team for sure. In terms of Alex Trebek, I think that you know, we've covered those topics over the years, and certainly we'll continue to do so. I posted a picture on my Instagram the other day. When we won the Emmy for the doctors years ago, he was actually he handed me the trophy when we won. It was always a fun memory, and made the award even that much more special, because he's such a great guy and he's been such a part of all of our lives for so many years, and he's become, you know, kind of one of your friends. And I think that any information, whatever it is, you listen to it more, you understand it better, and you take it to heart at a different level if one of your friends is telling you about it. And because so many people across multiple generations have what we feel like is such a personal relationship with Alex Trebek, whether we know him or just watch him on television, the fact that he comes into our homes, you know, every afternoon just makes it a different relationship. And so I think it was, you know, so amazing of him to share what he was going through and how he was going through it, because it affects the people that hear that story differently than just hearing it on the news or reading it in a magazine. It's almost like it happening to a friend of yours. And so I can only imagine the rate at which people will go and get tested and learn the symptoms of the condition, because somebody that they felt such a connection with shared their journey. And so I applaud him, but our thoughts and prayers are certainly with his family, and we hold him in extremely high esteem.
Absolutely, Jay. And what he did this last year and a half to fight this disease and do it with such class and to communicate what he was doing every step of the way with his audience and the public at large is really something special. It ends up being a great example of how we all should handle when we get situations like that in our life that could be terminal.
That's right.
How to handle it with the kind of grace and the kind of dignity and the kind of class that he did, with due respect for
his audience. Yeah, he certainly did handle it with dignity and class, and he handled it with a positive attitude. I mean, to watch him hosting his show, had he not told us, we wouldn't know. One thing that I've learned from doctors over the years on the show is that having that positive attitude is a real important aspect of dealing with whatever condition it is that you're dealing with. And so I think that whether people realize it or not, the way that he handled what he was going through will positively impact a lot of people in a lot of ways.
Jay McGraw is with us this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He's the executive producer of The Doctors, which just marked 2,000 episodes and more than 13 seasons on the air. It's on daily on many broadcast stations around the country. It's shared by CBS Television Enterprises. And he's with us for a few more minutes this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abram with you live from New York. We'd love to hear from you, so make a call. Go 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple041M. And coming up, we've got a brand new classic trivia winner, and we have our answer to our classic trivia question, which was done in memory of Alex Trebek. Gotta talk about Bull, because Monday night CBS, you have another milestone to mark, and that's start of season 5.
Yeah, I'm super excited about season 5. And love this television show. It's been so fun to do, and it was fun to create. And Weatherly could give him the phone book, as they would say on American Idol, and he would still make it compelling. He is such a talented actor.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that your company is working on some other pilots or other projects. Anything that's soon in the hopper you want to get on the air in 2021?
You know, we've got a lot of great stuff coming up, as well as the things that are on the air. But, man, I just love telling stories. I love finding things that we can relate with on either on a normal or on an absurd level. But, you know, those human dynamics and the human functioning, and my dad is so good at taking a story and really seeing the relationships, the communication, the situations at a different level than most of us look at it, right? I'm friends with some comedians, and I'm struck always by the fact that you walk into the same room that they do, and you see the same situation happening that they see, and they see it from such a funny point of view. And when you're talking in the car on the way home, it's like their perception of the room was just so different than mine, because they're just so funny, right? And that's easy and tangible to kind of understand, because you laugh at their version of the story. And my dad is the same way, but from such a psychological point of view. He walks into whatever room it is, whatever situation it is, with whoever he's with, and he just sees it from a different point of view. He's not trying to. It's just who he is. He just sees the human functioning and dynamics and relationships and conversations and whatever they are at a different and deeper level. And that has contributed so much in our ability to tell stories on television, because you're able to tell that scene in just a different and, I think, really compelling way. And so we do have a number of things coming up, and I always love to produce something that I'm excited to watch, and I think that's what we're going to keep doing.
Yeah. One other thing, what's it like to have not just a dad but a mom and being a couple in terms of having them be your parents? Because one of the things I always like about Dr. Phil is the end of that program, no matter how crazy the topic is or how insane the topic could be or how dramatic or very, very volatile a situation could be, at the end of the program, while the audience is clapping, Dr. Phil and wife go out together, hand in hand. And it's a really wonderful thing to see a couple to really take in the fact that they make a difference every day on that program.
Yeah, look, I've been blessed in a lot of ways, but the two of them are definitely the top of the list. They're amazing people and do amazing things for the world. My dad walks off with my mom every day because she's there every day, and she's there every day because she contributes in such a significant way to how he does what he does. It's just the barometer, the sounding board, sometimes confirming and sometimes conflicting opinion that gets him where he's going. And they make a really, really good team. And so he walks her off as a matter of practicality. He's walking by and she's sitting there every single day. And so they walk off together, the same as they walked over there together, which that's just not part of the television show. So they do a great job of providing so much for viewers and charities and the various things that they do. But I got to tell you, behind the scenes or before television, because, our family didn't start television until I was in college or late end of high school. And so just as parents in Texas, and you couldn't ask for anything better. My dad coached all my games until I started playing school sports, and then I was playing for a small school, and the new coach didn't have his bus driver's license yet. So for the away games, my mom would pack the entire team in the Suburban with the exception of me, because they were okay with me riding with the coach, right? And so she was there driving everyone to the games and, couldn't be more engaged, couldn't be more supportive, couldn't be more loving parents.
The Doctor is now in season 13 and just passing 2,000 original episodes. You can catch it daily on television stations all over the country, distributed by CBS Television Distribution. Check your local listings for not only where it is playing in your area, but when. Some stations play it in the morning, some afternoon, some lunchtime, some dinner hour, and some even late night. So you have to check not only the local station in your area that runs the program, but also when it runs. That's the nature of syndication. More details about the program online, you go to www.thedoctorstv.com. That's where you can get great medical information on a wide variety of topics as well. www.thedoctorstv.com. And don't forget, the fifth season of Bull premieres this Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local CBS station, starring Michael Wedley. Great performance, very well produced, I might add. And for more details about that series, CBS.com. Jay, thank you very, very much for making the time this Friday afternoon to be with us. Congratulations on both milestones and many, many more to come with your production company and what you do.
Great, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Let's do it again soon. Take care. All the greatest. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Jay McGraw, executive producer of The Doctors in syndication, full on CBS, joining us live from Los Angeles. Our classic trivia question winner coming up, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're a science fiction fan or you want to be a science fiction fan, how about trying this as an audiobook that you might want to check out as early as this weekend? Dune, the classic by one of the great writers in sci-fi of all time, Frank Herbert, the beginning of a wonderful chronicle that made it into movies, television series, specials, et cetera, et cetera. And you can do that right now with a trial run at Audible.com. In case you don't know, Audible.com is the, and we mean the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 20,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music, among other places. And if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, health and wellness information for a limited time only, a one-month trial of their service, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And how about this? If you're already an Amazon Prime member, make that two audiobooks that you can get for the trial of one. And one of those could be from the growing organization, or I should say catalog, of Audible Originals. It's everything from original audio productions, best of Broadway or Broadway regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man shows, all for you at any time. So how about getting into audibletrial.com/televised and finding out for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? And don't forget, it makes a great holiday gift. Holiday season's coming fast. Thanksgiving, 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks from now, not to mention Christmas, Hanukkah, et cetera, et cetera. So how about making this time a great time, even better, a time that lasts a lifetime with audible.com? Remember, it's audibletrial.com/televised. You will not be disappointed. This is Tomorrow Be Televised, the promo about the tube, and right now it's time for our classic trivia segment. And we have a winner of our classic trivia question. He's Vinny Cosenza from Brooklyn, New York. Vinny, congratulations. You're going to be winning Hitman, the best-selling autobiography of the legendary music producer David Foster, published by Pocketbook. It'll be coming out your way before the end of the weekend. The question we posed to you at the beginning of the week, in memory of Alex Trebek: on what game show did Alex Trebek face the spoilers? Well, the answer was Double Dare, not the Nickelodeon show, but the show that was on CBS from 1976 to 1977, produced by Mark Goodson and Bill Todman. The theme music is by Ed Kaloff. Yes, it was the theme that later became the theme from Card Sharks. And the whole idea of the game was that contestants would use one-sentence clues to try to dare and out-dare each other. And the winner of every game or match would then face the spoilers, PhDs, who would try to beat them at their own game. The show ran about 7-8 months on CBS, started in 76, ended in the spring of 77. And Alex, by the way, did a very good job. You can see episodes of Double Dare on YouTube. So once again, congratulations to Vinny Cosenza for winning our classic trivia question this week. And you get Hitman coming your way from Pocketbooks. We'll have a new classic trivia question for you on Monday's show. And when we present it, you get the opportunity to answer it for a prize. So email me when you hear the question, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And as Vinny Cosenza from Brooklyn, New York did, you enclose your name and your mailing address with the email. So if you win, you get the prize. Don't forget, if we don't get an answer by the end of Monday's program, we'll post it the following morning on Facebook at Simon Applebaum and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So play, and all the very best. Coming up in our final half hour, we go Spanish language with Estrella Media. Estrella TV is one of the top independently made Spanish language programming networks. Now they have a sister, Estrella News, for smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And that is not all. We'll meet two of the key executives at Estrella Media, live from Los Angeles, when we come back, pausing first at the top of the hour for web identification. It's www.blogtalkradiospeakerandtuneinradio.com. Together, reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Start your Saturday morning off with The Cricket Show, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. That's The Cricket Show, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Best of VTR and speaker 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marby Televised. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from New York, 90-day edition, happening until the bottom of the hour. And we want to get you involved. Got some great guests coming your way. So give us a call and be with them and us, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and Tuner Radio. And don't forget, we've got our chat room going and ready for you. SimonApple04 is the name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, you can also connect with others anytime you like by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Speaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions of the people who live with you and us. And coming up near the bottom of the hour, one more thought about the passing of Norm Crosby, who passed away over this weekend. The master of malaprops, who had a great television career, in spite of a very interesting situation in his life. We'll talk about that coming up this half hour. But first, joining us live from Los Angeles are two of the key executives who are involved with Estrella Media, the independent Spanish language programmer. First up, the executive vice president of programming there, Ivan Silakovic. Ivan, great to have you here.
Thanks, Simon. Nice to be here.
And joining us as well, your counterpart when it comes to digital operations, Renee Santella. Renee, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having us.
It is a pleasure. I will start with you. Let's talk about Estrella News, which started earlier this month. What kind of newscast is it, or news channel is it, and what's it all about?
Thanks, Simon. So we saw an opportunity in the market. We had expanded our news coverage into Dallas, Houston, and Miami over the last 2 years, and really saw an opportunity to provide a 24-hour, 24/7 news stream to the Hispanics in the U.S. and launched Estrella News basically in October, which is a 24/7 news feed providing news content to the Hispanics in the U.S. We were launched on our multicast in October as well as Tubi, and we've got a full rollout in the coming months. So so far it's been great. We're really proud of it.
So, Renee, unlike Estrella TV, which is a broadcast network, operating on stations across the country. How is this being distributed, this news channel? Is it just on multicast channels, which involve local stations and cable systems, or are you also doing smart TV sets, smart TV devices? Tubi, of course, is a smart TV bundle.
Yeah, so we are really focused on where our consumers are. The Hispanic audience is digital just like anyone else. And so we want to make sure we are where they are consuming content. And it's a really valuable service to have for them. So we're going to be distributing everywhere. We're going to be on streaming boxes, smart TVs, gaming consoles. We're working with great partners across the board to make sure we have this live linear type streaming experience. And we're really excited about it. And it's important for our audience to have access to this valuable content 24/7. And just, I want to correct one thing that you said. Australia TV is also available over the top. And we are doing a similar type of distribution for Australia TV as well.
So, Renee, staying with you, this is a shift from what it used to be, because beforehand it was a broadcast, it was basically broadcast station. Now it sounds like one of the new things that Estrella Media, your parent company, is doing is that you're going to, as you, if you launch more networks like this news channel, it will be on a variety of platforms.
Yeah, we are looking at how the consumer is viewing content. And the truth is the consumer's watching on any device, anytime. It has, and you know, when you look at what was happening in the industry before the pandemic, the seeds were already planted for consumer trends with, you know, linear TV or theatrical film or whatever. I think the pandemic has actually just accelerated some of these trends. And so we just have to make sure that we take care of our linear TV audience that prefers to watch that way. And I'm sure there's super fans out there as well that want to watch it on linear or mobile phone, whatever device they want to watch our great shows like Tengo Talento, Mucho Talento, and our news. And then there's a new audience that is just consuming this content through digital, through streaming. And we want to make sure that they have access to it. We create over 4,000 hours of original programming, entertainment, news, content around our sports. You know, we have LAFC and LA Charger games, and we want to push this content out far and wide.
Ivan, with this news network, what kind of format does it have? Does it have a newswheel approach, a headline news kind of network, or is it, for example, a mix of half-hour, hour newscasts and shows that are either commentary, opinion-based, or shows that deal with specific topics, whether it's politics, sports, medicine, health, entertainment, and so on?
It's a single wheel model, like a cable model. You know, we don't have an east and west coast feed like we have on the linear side. We have one feed, and it does cycle throughout the day. And it's a combination of, you know, digital first news content that we're producing only on the Estrella News platform, and then we have some content that is shown on both our network and Estrella News, because we produce both national and local news on the network as well. So it was really an expansion of our news efforts and our growing, you know, news gathering capabilities. And, you know, so you have, you know, a variety of different news products that are available throughout the day part.
Estrella Media, the independent Spanish language service programmer, is our subject this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Joining us live from Los Angeles, where the company is based, we've got Ivan Stojkovic. He is the Executive Vice President of Programming. And Renee Santella, he is the Executive Vice President of Digital Operations. And they're both with us live right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abba, I'm with you live from the other coast, Nueva York, where it is 49 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. Masters going on, by the way. Second round underway. Looks like it will probably be suspended in the next hour or so because of darkness. If that's the case, by the way, everyone who's still in the course will come back tomorrow morning around 7:30. To complete that second round, and ESPN will cover it as they did today with the first round. They will cover it with the coverage starting around 7 a.m., 7:30 a.m. Eastern time. Then CBS will pick up the coverage the rest of the way around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. So check local listings and local websites, including ESPN.com, for that information. If you have a question or comment for both of our guests, well, make the call. Make it happen. 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. As we said before, we have another great war story to tell you about on Monday. It's a new HBO Max miniseries called Valley of Tears. And one of the top producers in Israeli television, who's been responsible for such shows as Prisoner of War, later Homeland, and Euphoria, whose HBO English version became an Emmy nominee, Emmy winner this year for Zendaya's lead performance. We have him with us live as our lead guest, Ron Lesham. He's the co-creator, co-writer, and executive producer of Valley of Tears, coming up soon on HBO Max. Then we'll have Kiki Melendez joining us. She is the creator of the Albany Cultural TV Festival. Happened 2 years ago in New York and L.A. We had her at the time. Now it's in L.A. virtually next month, and she's going to bring a lot of unique talents all out to create new series produced and created by people of color. We'll talk to Kiki on Monday as well. And finally, we'll talk to the creator and performer of a unique dramatic special that will be running this weekend on All Arts, the public television presented news channel available on smart TV sets and smart devices and locally on broadcast here in the greater New York area. The program is called Until the Flood. You'll meet the creator and performer, Dale Orlander-Smith. I think you'll find her a very, very unique talent. And that's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Ivan, it's been a while since we've heard a lot about where Estrella TV is at. We know that one of the things you've done all along these years has been to zig where the other Spanish language networks, Univision, Telemundo, and so forth, zag. And you've been concentrating a lot on unscripted programming, talent variety shows or competition shows, game shows, et cetera, et cetera. Where is Estrella TV at right now?
So, it's a good question, Simon. And I mean, obviously, this year has been a tough year all the way around, I think, for everybody. And with the pandemic, we had to, put all of our entertainment shows into hiatus in March. We continued with our news operations just because we felt it was, invaluable to sort of keep our audience updated on what's been happening through the pandemic. We had to retool and figure out how do we produce safely in this environment. And, we came back with a sort of a split season with Tango Talento, Mucho Talento, with a completely redesigned set with virtual audience and safety protocols that allowed us to continue on in with that show. And we're doing a special version of Tango Talento, Mucho Talento this fall with together with Sony Music. So that's a new venture for us right now. And we're looking and analyzing sort of what's going to happen with the pandemic and what we can produce safely. And we're looking at new formats and new content to roll out in 2021. So, kind of keeping an eye on things and seeing where the market will take us, but definitely still, embracing the counter programming strategy and trying to bring our viewers, a variety of content that they can watch.
Yeah.
And
what
can I just
think
say,
Tango Talento has really struck a nerve? I mean, go ahead, Renee.
I was just going to say, I know this is kind of a biased opinion, but I want to give credit to Yvonne and the entire production team on what they've accomplished during such a difficult time. It's really been creative and amazing, and they've been following all the guidelines, and I just wanted to say great work. It, truly.
Thanks, Renee. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, every single day brings its challenges, but, our main goal was, listen, we got to keep the staff and our crew safe. And how do we do this, given the environment? So I think everybody's really leaned into it to make it a safe process. And we've been able to keep putting out content. So.
Yeah. For both of you, why do you think this particular show, Tango Talento, has been the hit it has? This has really been one of the great success stories of all Spanish language television, and that it's a talent variety show. It's been on for several years. It's on nightly, and that's in itself an interesting thing to work out, to be rather than a weekly show. Why do you think it has hit the kind of nerve it has?
I think that the success of that show is that we cast throughout the United States and actually in Mexico, and this season we've got some contestants from Costa Rica and even Holland for that matter. But we really we really offer the stage to anybody that's got talent. It's, you know, we open it up and it resonates with who the actual audience that watches our network are. So, you know, you see people, it gives everybody an opportunity to get out and showcase their talents. And, you know, it's a fun format. It's very playful. I mean, it really sort of pays tribute to who we are in terms of our regional Mexican, you know, roots with our radio stations. And it's just a fun format that I think it works. And because it you know, everybody can see themselves on TV and see their, you know, whether it's their brothers or their mom or their daughters or sons, that, you know, it really reaches out to families across the U.S. So we're very lucky that it's still going.
Yeah. And I'll just add to what Yvonne is saying is, you know, from a social standpoint, you know, we have over 17 million followers between YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, and Tengo Talento is very popular among that footprint. And what makes it popular is a combination of the personalities of the talent on the show, but also the storylines that Yvonne was talking about. It really resonates in a viral way in social, and it's very engaging, and you keep this audience kind of following the show throughout the years, and it's just been really successful for us that way too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Renee, starting with you, how do you see YouTube as well as social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, WhatsApp, and more recently TikTok and Snapchat, do you use it as a springboard to find new talent that you can then find a full-length TV series for?
You know, obviously that's something that we've experimented with and tested, and I think there's still more to do there. YouTube is an incredible, powerful channel, and it will continue to be. I mean, it's, if you think about how people use YouTube, it's a search channel. It really is. People search, and then that's how they find videos. So whatever the content is, think of it as a browser almost, but it's with video content. So with that powerful tool in mind, it's something that we will continue to use. It's YouTube's a great partner of ours. We have a lot of content there, and we do plan on testing the waters with different concepts using it. It's a great vehicle for that.
Yeah. For either of you, you also have a great relationship going with Fremantle, the game show producer. You've been doing for several years the Spanish language version of Family Feud, which had, by the way, a great history on Spanish language television in the U.S. and before that, Mexico. It used to be called 100 Mexicanos Dijero. Now it's 100 Latinos Dijero and so forth. 100 people, survey says. How is that going? And have you talked with Fremantle about adapting some of their other shows for Spanish language TV?
So, yeah, I mean, Fremantle's a fantastic partner, and I work very closely with their team in producing the show, and it's been a great experience. You know, we were in our fourth season right now with Mao Nieto hosting Cien Latinos Dijeron. We're also airing some of the earlier episodes that were hosted by Marco Antonio Rahil that's also on the network. So, you know, we are airing both versions of the show right now, and we'll look to continue producing more with Fremantle. We've looked at a lot of formats with them, and we're in discussions with them now for content potentially for next year. I mean, they've had challenges as well in terms of COVID and producing content, but yeah, they're a fantastic partner, and we'll look to do more with them in the future as well.
I love Marco, incidentally. I think he's a marvelous host, either in Spanish or English.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And he's had a fantastic career. Telemundo reran the Minute to Win It episodes he did for the former Mundo Fox Network a long time back. And I met him in person. I'll tell you, I am shocked he still is not getting he's great in Spanish, but he also is terrific in English. And I wish somebody would give him a game show or a host role in English at some point, because he's really outstanding.
Yeah, he's a great talent. And I love Marco. We had him on a show, Mi Sueño Es Bailar, as a host a few years back. And we also just started a new series with Omar Chaparro, who's sort of in that, you know, that same just, you know, super talent that's just amazing to work with. And we've got a new talk show with him, you know, Tonight con Omar Chaparro, that just launched late October and is airing right now on the network. So we're super grateful to have and be able to work with people like that.
We got a few more minutes with two of the key people behind Estrella Media, the Spanish language program behind Estrella TV and now Estrella News that's appearing all over the place. Executive Vice President of Programming Ivan Sokovich and Executive President of Digio Renee Santinel. They're both with us live from Los Angeles, and we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. A pair of new ventures will get the spotlight next Friday right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. They're both out to be caused in 2021. Actually, one is now really starting to happen in 2020, but could break out in 2021. And I think people will be talking a lot more about them. One is called Global Environment Media. It was announced earlier this week. It's a new service that will present solutions to environmental problems on a 24/7 basis. And the second one is called Seize the Show. It's a very interesting, interactive, choose-your-own-way with a television situation. We'll talk to David Carpenter. He's the person behind it. And the last name, for all you TV theme music fans, might be familiar. We'll explain why when he comes on next Friday. Also, we'll meet the producer, writer, director, and star of a new Netflix movie, one of their holiday films this year called A New York Christmas Wedding. His name, Otaja Abit. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And don't forget the following week, we'll be on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of that week, all at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. For both of you, Spanish language television has come a long way over the last four decades. That's how long I've been covering it. It seems, however, there's one arena of Spanish language television that is still in the infancy, and that is the scripted television program, nightly or daily, that is produced in the United States that features U.S. Latino talent in front of and behind the camera. When I used to raise this issue with the folks at Univision Telemundo way back when, the issue was we don't have enough advertising to make the budgets. It seems now the advertising has finally happened. Why do we still have this situation? And what is it going to take to get Spanish language scripted television produced in the U.S. on a regular basis with U.S. produced talent?
Scripted programming is definitely it's not easy to produce, and you know, just the overall structure and the writing. I mean, you need to have, the right crew to do that. We are actually working with Endemol right now on some scripted programming for next year. And it's something that we typically haven't done due to the strip nature of our programming model that we tend to strip a lot of the shows that we run. So, but it's something that's on our radar, and we, you know, we've been developing relationships with some amazing talent, and it's something that we're looking into for the future, for sure.
That's great to see. And by the way, we're really great at Endemol because they've been one of the folks who really tried. A couple of years ago, they did El Vato for Universo. They ran two seasons. Terrific show. It should have gotten more in the press than I thought it got. It was a wonderful series for them. I also want to credit Telemundo for Betty and Y last year. That was a marvelous attempt at an Ugly Betty remake. I thought it was very well done, super cast. Done in New York, mostly in Miami, but I thought it really hit the spot. And I do know they have a romantic comedy series that they're going to be premiering, I think, in January, February next year out of Miami. So maybe, just maybe, we'll stop having this be one and done or one and wait a great while, and then we'll have this on a more consistent basis. Go ahead, Renee.
Yeah, I was just going to add to what you were saying. You brought up advertising the Hispanic audience. And, you know, despite the fact that in the last decade, over half of the population growth has been tied to Hispanics. Hispanics are now 60 million strong in the United States, representing 18% of the general population. And despite that, when you look at the overall dollars towards advertising, it's not the same ratio that it should be based on the population size. And there's a problem with that, and it's a missed business opportunity. And brands and advertisers need to realize that it's a for-profit opportunity. It's something that should be included in your business plan. And there is a big difference between hitting someone's heart and hitting their device. And what I mean by that is that Hispanics they are more likely to react to creative ads in Spanish language, in culture that recognizes who they are on a personal level, than than they are when it's just a regular standard creative ad and it's just kind of running all over the place. So there's an opportunity here for brands and advertisers to do different creative for the Hispanic audience and work with media companies like Estrella Media. And I just want to say that there's still more work to be done here in the industry.
Very much so. And your company is definitely on the forefront of making it happen. And by the way, I hope that next year, everything willing here in New York, that Estrella does a upfront event. I know you did a couple of them in New York the last couple, unfortunately not in the last few years, but hopefully maybe this coming year, if everything works out, you can come back in the spring and do something. I think a lot more people should know about what Estrella is doing, both Estrella TV and now with Estrella News, and hopefully more projects to come.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate it.
We really do.
You're very, very
Thank
welcome.
Thank you for having us.
If you want to know more about what Estrella Media is up to, here's where you go online, estrellamedia.com. Remember, Estrella TV is carried all over the place, some markets on local TV stations, other places elsewhere. And now Estrella News, 24/7, available on multicast channels, smart TV sets, smart device, et cetera, et cetera. One more time, estrellamedia.com. Ivan, Renee, thank you both very much for coming on. Keep us posted about what you're up to. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Thanks, Simon. We appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. Have a super weekend.
You too.
You too. Have a good one. Stay safe out there.
Right.
Will do. Ivan Zekovich, Ray Santella, joining us live from Los Angeles. On Monday's program, in addition to spending some time dealing with the death of Alex Trebek, we also remember Norm Crosby, the master of the malaprop, a marvelous television personality, did everything from guest shots to talk variety appearances, stand-up comedy, and his own stand-up comedy showcase, The Comedy Shop, in syndication for 3 years in the late 1970s, early 1980s. One thing we didn't cover, and I wanted to make sure before we leave you today that we did, is this. For much of his career, Norm Crosby had a hearing loss problem. And for many years, he was a spokesperson for the Better Hearing Institute. He was one of the first people to come out of the closet and say to the American public, I'm dealing with a medical issue, and I'm dealing with it powerfully. In fact, when he did spots, commercial spots, for the Better Hearing Institute, he would always end up with, you ought to hear what you've been missing. Norm Crosby, of course, passed away over this weekend at the age of 93. And then, by the way, before he died, he was also honored by another organization, the Starkey Hearing Foundation. Starkey Hearing Foundation that helps supply hearing aids to kids, particularly kids who are in low-income households. If you want to more know about that foundation, maybe you want to make a contribution to Norm Crosby's honor, go to www.starkeyhearingfoundation.org. StarkeyHearingFoundation.org. Thanks to all of our guests for being here today. Thanks to all of you. We're back on Monday. In the meantime, if you missed any part of today's program, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version. It'll be available soon. For those of you watching the Masters, don't forget, probably tomorrow morning, ESPN will have early morning coverage of the second round wrapping up, 7 or 7:30 a.m. Eastern Pacific time. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Sage Steinberg is head of content. And the co-founders of Enterprise, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we televised brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two, 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. Don't forget you can follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. And however you follow me, I do respond to your emails and other things. Why? Because what you say matters. For tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We are back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, the iRadio Podcast Network, and Amazon Music. Between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And let's quit this pandemic now and forever. And as Norm Crosby once said, you ought to hear what you've been missing. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.